Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, somebody who apparently works for Regal wrote in and sent us an email that I wanted to read at the top of the show today. They said, on a recent episode, you mentioned Regal is in the midst of a bankruptcy and might not be around much longer. We, in fact, exited bankruptcy in 2023 and just announced $250 million in capital raised to renovate current locations. I get it's cool to crap on bigger theater chains, but let's not spread incorrect negative news like that. We're all out here trying to do the same thing, and that is preserve the theatrical experience. So I went back and checked the tape on this, and the might not be around much longer thing was actually part of a listener email speculating about a location that was close to them. So that wasn't our viewpoint on the show, but we did say that Regal's parent company was still in the middle of bankruptcy proceedings, and that is not true. They came out of a financial restructuring process last year. So I apologize that we got that aspect wrong. I want to thank the person who sent this in for calling us out on it. I obviously never want to purposefully spread any incorrect information on the show, so I do appreciate that.
Also, I would like to say Regal, as far as the major theater chains go, definitely is better than AMC. If I go to a Regal, it's usually in better condition than an AMC location. So that's good.
Excellent. Yeah, I wish I had a Regal around me. I just don't have one within like reasonable driving distance. I would like to do like a compare and contrast of my local AMC, but I just don't have that opportunity really. The day after that episode came out where we were talking about the subject, the Hollywood Reporter published an article that this emailer mentioned about Regal raising $250 million. So we couldn't have known about that at the time of our original recording, but the larger point still stands. And I'm glad to see that Regal has the opportunity to put money into its theaters to try to improve that theatrical experience for everybody. So I just wanted to mention that up top. All right, let's get into the news here. Unfortunately, we need to start with two more obituary mentions here. Shelley Duvall and Shannen Doherty both passed away. Brad, do you have any, I know you have familiarity with both of these people, but I guess were any of their movies in your regular rotation? Do you have any thoughts about the passing of these two actresses?
I mean, you know, The Shining is a certified classic, and of course that's the movie that everyone often equates with Shelley Duvall, especially considering the stories that came out from behind the scenes afterwards and the trouble working with Stanley Kubrick. And it's even more tragic knowing that Shelley Duvall's health later in life, especially her mental health, took a turn for the worse, and it was really, you know, sad to see that like someone like that takes such a sad turn. So yeah, it was really upsetting to hear about that, but she has a legacy, you know, that will live on, and hopefully some of it will also serve as, you know, a cautionary tale of so that certain actors will protect themselves and ensure that they're not in, you know, terrible positions when working with filmmakers.
Yeah
Shannen Doherty, my biggest memory with of her work is actually Mallrats.
Me too.
Because I was not a Beverly Hills 90210 kid growing up. Those shows just weren't my jam, and I didn't care about them. So I know that's what everyone loved Shannen Doherty for, because she was such an excellent villain on that show. I think actually all of the characters are probably villains on that show, but she was especially young, and so it really is tragic that, you know, she ended up passing away so soon.
Yeah, I actually had the chance to work with Shannen Doherty for a little bit. I was just like working as a production assistant on a series of commercials when I was living in LA, like the early days when I first got out there, and was just sort of bouncing around and just working, you know, scrapping around and doing whatever jobs I could. And she was the star of, I honestly don't even remember what even the commercial was, but I ran the teleprompter while she was reading it, you know, inside the camera or whatever. So it was kind of cool just to, I think we probably said five words to each other, but she was very nice on the set and was super professional and all that, which is like, you would think that would be the baseline, but honestly, there have been so many stories of people who just like sort of bar, especially in a scenario like that, like a sort of low grade commercial that, like, you know, actors often feel like that stuff is well beneath them, and like they sort of stomp around and kind of treat people like trash often, but that was not what happened with Shannen Doherty at all. So I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. All right. So let's get into some happier news here. Let's talk about some trailers. So Captain America, Brave New World, that trailer was released. Actually, all of these trailers have been released, like, let's call it over the past week or so since we've done a new episode. So most people have probably seen these already, but this is our first regular opportunity to talk about it on an episode of the podcast. So what did you make of this trailer, Brad?
I thought it was decent. I think it has a good edit for a teaser trailer. I really liked the way it did the graphic bumpers to like the beat of the drum and made it have like a certain amount of intensity. It really is pushing back on the political action thriller vibe that the Winter Soldier had. But I can't help but be worried about the looming shadow that is all the behind the scenes news about this movie, because this is a movie that had to endure drastic reshoots, so much that Giancarlo Esposito's character in this movie wasn't in the original script and was added in rewrites for those reshoots. And yeah, that's a concern. But what they show looks decent. I like seeing Harrison Ford as Thunderbolt Ross. Feels like he's got the right gruff demeanor to carry on that character from William Hurt, who unfortunately passed away a little while back. And I think there's some cool stuff here. You know, obviously, like, you can complain about some of the visual effects not looking polished, but like, that's just the nature of teaser trailers. You know, those shots aren't going to be completely finished and ready for the big screen. You know, that's just how it is. So you have to accept that and not be overly critical of it. But yeah, if anything, I'm curious, and I would like to be optimistic about it, but I'm definitely worried.
Yeah, I find myself in the same boat, and I'm thinking a lot about the behind the scenes stuff. And like, I just really wish that Marvel was in the position. It would just be nice. It would be a nicer scenario if Marvel was in the position of having this next big movie, you know, after taking some time off, and you've got Deadpool and Wolverine, which kind of feels like its own thing that's coming out this year. So to me, Captain America Brave New World feels like the first real return to like a big, like, capital A action Marvel Studios type of movie that we're going to get since the, I don't know if you want to call it like the cultural collapse of Marvel, almost, like, that we've experienced over the past few years. I just wish that the scenario was such that Marvel had a really, really strong movie with great bones to it, where there were no troublesome behind the scenes stories, and they could just come out and put their best foot forward, and then people could just talk about the movie as it exists, rather than, you know, us experiencing this worry that we have. And I'm sure we're going to do our best to try to talk about the movie that we get, the final cut, and try not to get too much into that behind the scenes stuff, unless it's just like blatantly obvious, which sometimes it is, you know, when in the final product, and there's nothing you can really do about that. So,
and there's a good chance too that most of general audiences will just be blissfully unaware of any of that even happening. Cause like, I even have a couple friends who love Marvel movies and stuff like that. And they're also okay in the same position where they feel like Marvel's kind of like teetering right now on not doing things so well. But they hadn't even heard that there were drastic reshoots for the movie, or that Giancarlo Esposito's character was added in those reshoots. So this is stuff that like we know about, but maybe doesn't really like actually get into the general public's, you know, viewpoint. So maybe it won't even be a problem for them.
Yeah. But yeah, that being said, I still, like you, I enjoyed certain aspects of this trailer. I thought it was a good edit as well. And fingers crossed that they're able to pull this off, because like, you know, as we've been saying for really the entirety of Marvel Studios' existence, that's kind of the way that they've been making these movies, is like kind of piecemeal and tons of reshoots and like putting stuff together and really like sewing up the seams. And a lot of times you can't really tell. So fingers crossed it's one of those types of situations. So what did you think about, I guess, speaking of Marvel, what did you think about the Agatha All Along trailer that dropped a little while back?
So I was intrigued by, I'll say, like the first half of the trailer, because I really like the idea of the fact that Wanda seems to have turned the tables on Agatha and trapped her in her own TV show, in the same way that Wanda was experiencing her life through this perspective of skewed sitcoms spanning different styles across various decades. And it looks like from the start that Agatha is stuck in like a true detective, you know, Mayor of Easttown kind of crime thriller. And I thought it would have been really cool if that was something that played out in a more extended fashion in some way. But then the second half of the trailer kind of veers into this like weird, almost Hocus Pocus esque, like comedy fantasy kind of thing. And that was when I was like, maybe not.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that latter part is really going to be like the thrust of the show, like the tone that the show really goes for. I will say I appreciated the sort of horror aspects of it. It seems to, I mean, maybe aside from Werewolf by Night, it seems to be the most horror forward thing that we've seen in the MCU, certainly in a long time. I guess you could throw Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness in there as well if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, man. It's one of those things where like, fool me how many times at this point, you know, like even if I love this trailer, these shows have just been so lackluster and they just have felt like they've almost all of them have overstayed their welcome. There have been bright spots, even in shows that I haven't liked. It seems like there are always two or three great ideas in every one of these shows.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of degrees of whether or not, you know, all you're going to take away from it is those two or three things. And they're really, there's just like nothing but padding on in all of the rest of the episodes or what. So
it's also been 3 years since WandaVision came out and it just feels like it's too late. Like unless you were able to like do a quick like special or something that did this, like this just feels like, oh no, we kind of moved on already.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's almost like if they weren't able to get this up and running immediately, then they should have just scrapped the whole thing. But I don't know. Again, like we'll see. Fingers crossed. I'm always hopeful that this stuff turns out well, but just, you know, a gut check reaction. I'm kind of in like the really we're doing this mode for Agatha all along. So we'll see. There's a 2-episode premiere in September for that one. So stay tuned there. And Captain America Brave New World premieres in February of 2025, I think. All right. Last trailer I wanted to talk to you about, Brad, is Gladiator 2. I think this dropped like right after we recorded our last traditional news episode on the show. So we haven't had a chance to really dig into this yet. What did you think about this one?
I really dug this trailer, honestly. I think that, you know, you could complain that the movie, or at least the trailer, makes it seem like this is a very basic retread of what is pretty much the exact same plot of the original Gladiator, but this time following Lucius, who somehow fell out of line with his more upscale, high-class lineage and became a warrior and like a slave and then ends up in the gladiatorial arena. But I don't mind that. There's sometimes where I kind of miss the days when sequels used to just be mostly retreads of the original movie with just like some slight variations. And for me, the fact that you have Ridley Scott back directing and you have such a stellar cast. I mean, watching Denzel Washington in his brief moments alone is enough to have like me totally in to see this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's not even including Joseph Quinn. And I forget the other guy's name from
Fred Hechinger.
Yes. Yeah. Both of those little like dandy, you know, weird guys. Like I would love to see more of them, of course. And Pedro Pascal looking like a badass too, you know. It's just like there's too many cool things in this trailer for me to like get up in arms about. What's the same story? It's like, grow up.
Yeah. Are there any examples off the top of your head that you can think of that fall into that category that you're talking about, of the sequels that kind of feel like retreads but in a good way?
I mean, 22 Jump Street comes to mind, and that's mostly because they do a really good job of like providing meta commentary on it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of one that isn't a comedy approach though, and unfortunately I'm coming up dry. But
I was wondering if Ghostbusters 2 applies, but yeah, it's been a long time somewhat since I've seen that, so I don't know.
Somewhat. The for me, the problem with Ghostbusters 2 was always that it veered into more cartoonish territory because they knew they had like an audience that was coming from real Ghostbusters. So it's not quite exactly the same. I wish I had thought of like movies that kind of fit that bill, but I'm coming up dry, so sorry.
No worries. I'm putting you on the spot. So for me, like I also really enjoyed this trailer. I remember when, I don't know, I guess when I was kind of coming up as a movie viewer and like really in the pocket of going to the theater all the time, there were movies like Troy and Alexander and King Arthur and Kingdom of Heaven and 300. Like these were the movies that were sort of all the rage during that period. So there's something slightly nostalgic about this trailer for me in a weird way. The sort of like throwback to this sword and sandal epic that used to be like a huge deal in like the 1950s and 60s, and then kind of like dropped out of favor for a while, and then was really brought back in the early 2000s in a big way because of the success of Gladiator. And so just to see the cycle come all the way back around with now Gladiator 2 coming out, I don't know, there's just something that feels a little like, it's weird to be like, aw, Gladiator 2, buddy, I missed you. You know, like that kind of thing for a movie where people, where there's like sharks eating people in the Colosseum and like some gnarly violence and stuff. But that's kind of how I feel about it. So I'm excited about it. Paul Mescal looks pretty fantastic, I think. And yeah, I'm right there with you in terms of it. It definitely looks like it's hitting very, very familiar beats, but it has been, whatever, 24 years since the original. So I feel like they can get away with it. And Ridley Scott is so good at, I mean, we saw this in Napoleon earlier, I guess it was late last year, where he's so good at these big scale siege tactics and like battles and all of that kind of stuff. Like there's nobody that films that stuff like Ridley does. So I'm definitely excited to see how this movie pans out. You know, do you think there's any sort of, based solely on this trailer, Brad, and maybe your knowledge of what else is coming out this year, do you think there's going to be like awards talk around Gladiator 2 the same way that there was around the original? Because the first movie won Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. I think it probably, you know, ultimately depends on the quality of the movie once it comes out. But like, I see no reason, you know, why it can't be. I mean, for the longest time, you know, the Academy did like sword and sandal epics. The Academy likes Ridley Scott. You know, there's a lot of good things pulling for it. The Academy loves Denzel Washington, too, you know. So I think there's definitely an opportunity here for it to walk away with some awards. And I hope it's good enough to warrant that kind of talk in the future.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a break and then we'll be right back. Okay, I wanted to talk to you about Michael Bay's first TV show. So he's going to be directing a show that's kind of going to be coming to Netflix called Barbaric, and it's based on a Vault Comics series of the same name. I've never heard of this, but Sam Claflin from the Hunger Games movies, and he was recently in Daisy Jones and the Six, is going to be starring in this as... let's see here. He's going to be playing Owen, a barbarian looking for redemption. And he is going to be wielding a talking demonic axe, which is going to be voiced by Patrick Stewart. And Michael Bay is directing the show. So we don't know how much Michael Bay is going to be involved. We don't know if it's like one of those Michael Mann in Tokyo Vice type of situations where he just basically directs the first episode and then kind of walks away, even though there's like an executive producer credit that goes along with that, or if he's going to be directing the whole season, or like what his level is there. But I don't know, what was your response here? Because this is the first time Michael Bay is moving into TV territory. And what do you think about him directing a fantasy Netflix show with these people involved with this premise?
I'm at the very least curious just because of the Patrick Stewart connection there, because him voicing a talking axe that is apparently demonic. And I also saw someone say somewhere on social media that the axe is also horny, I think.
Amazing.
So, please sign me up. You know, and plus it's been so long since Michael Bay has like done something a little different than what we've come to expect. He was doing Transformers for so long. And you know what to expect from like his traditional action movies, but this, you know, has a fantasy flair to it. And so seeing him delve into that kind of world, I think offers a whole new playground to really have some fun. So yeah, bring on the fantasy Bayhem.
I think you're forgetting about The Last Knight, Brad, the Transformers.
Oh, no, trust me. I didn't forget about The Last Knight as much as I wanted to, because I was on the set for that movie and I went to the world premiere of that movie in Chicago with my parents. Boy, that was a long movie.
Oh, man. Okay. Our next story here is that Shrek 5 is officially coming in 2026. I don't remember. Brian and I may have mentioned this briefly in a previous episode, but I wanted to get your take on this because I think both of us, if memory serves, both of us really enjoyed Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Did you like that movie?
Yes, right? Okay. Loved it. It was very good.
So, you know, being back in that universe, I was kind of, I don't know, hesitant to return and kind of like, oh man, I don't know about this. And that movie was surprisingly fantastic. So that film ends with like a very, very loose tease of more Shrek-verse adventures to come. And now they're finally following up on this. I think there's been talk about another Shrek movie for a long time. I want to say Shrek Forever After came out in like 2011 or something like that, 2010 maybe. So it's been a long, long time since we've had like a standard Shrek saga movie, I guess, if you want to call it that. So what do you make of Shrek 5? We've got Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, and Cameron Diaz all coming back, even though Cameron Diaz like quasi-retired from making movies, but she's going to be back in a new Netflix movie a little while. It seems like she's just being very, very choosy about her projects. What do you think about all this?
So Shrek the Third was bad, and Shrek Forever After was worse. And I hope that they've come up with something that makes it worth returning to Shrek that is funny. And so, like, the fact that Puss in Boots: The Last Wish was very good does give me some hope, but I am concerned simply because, yeah, it seems like Shrek kind of lost its way. And so I hope that they can find some of the magic that made those first two movies good to begin with. I just don't know if it's still there. There's a chance that, you know, like, so much has happened in pop culture since then, they can find a cool, you know, new approach to make it relevant again. But I mean, count me skeptical for now, because I just feel like the Shrek franchise really went off the rails and just like lost itself and wasn't really funny, didn't have, you know, a compelling story. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at with Shrek.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're talking about there being so much that's happened in pop culture that they could potentially riff on. But this franchise is kind of known for like the fantasy tropes and fairy tale storytelling and stuff like that. And that stuff has existed for a long time. So like, I would think that this...
Well, I mean, the first Shrek has like, it has references to, and the second Shrek has references to Lord of the Rings. It has a Matrix gag in it. You know, it has some other...
But you know, that's not good.
I don't know. At the time, it wasn't bad. You know, like it's, I think that like some of the things may come off as like a little bit lazy and haven't aged as well, just because the landscape of pop culture has changed. You know, those references seem dated, but at the time they were fun, you know. But I would prefer something that skews closer to like How to Train Your Dragon, as opposed to something that like fits back into the later Shrek sequel territory. So yeah, yeah. I do wonder what like the comedy vibe will be like this time.
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure, it's going to make astronomical sums of money, because
yeah, Shrek is crazy big these days.
Yeah, people love that first movie, and Puss in Boots: The Last Wish did really well. And I just think, yeah, meme wise and everything, I just feel like this is going to be like at least $1 billion grosser. But we'll see how that goes. 2026 for that one. I wanted to ask you, I'm glad you're on for this episode, about Kevin Smith's new Jay and Silent Bob movie. So we know that he's working on a new Jay and Silent Bob film. And recently he posted on his Instagram this book that looks very much like the Necronomicon from the Evil Dead movies, the Book of the Dead. And it seems to be, I'm not going to try to describe it because it's basically
if you took the face from the Necronomicon and you put Silent Bob's hat and goatee on it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, there we go. Yeah, it turns out there actually was a really easy way to describe that. As always, you can go click on the story in the show notes and see the picture embedded in there just to get your own visual of this thing. But the implication here is that this new Jay and Silent Bob film could be a horror movie, or at least have horror movie elements to it. So I know you're a big Kevin Smith guy, Brad. You and I shared a love of his movies growing up, and I think you have stayed on that train much longer than I have. But what do you make of this potential horror angle for a Jay and Silent Bob story?
If there's a way to keep me interested in Jay and Silent Bob, this is kind of the way to do it, because putting them in a specific genre as opposed to just having them be in a general like goofy buddy comedy adventure is an interesting approach. It could work, but my primary concern is just that the quality of Kevin Smith's writing and filmmaking, especially even with regards to Jay and Silent Bob, hasn't been up to snuff. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was the last Jay and Silent Bob, you know, adventure that I truly enjoyed. And like Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, it had potential to do something interesting, but it's lacking the same life and cleverness that made those original movies with Jay and Silent Bob so much fun, you know. Even Clerks 3 was something that like it got deadly serious, almost too serious. And I don't use deadly as like an intentional pun, because it is, you know, inspired by Kevin Smith's very real brush with death. But it was just, it's missing something that Kevin Smith used to have. And it feels like he's lost in over the past, you know, decade and a half or so.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, maybe tapping into a specific genre is something that could, you know, spark something fun for Jay and Silent Bob to get caught up in. But I don't know. I am, I grow more and more skeptical with each new movie.
Yeah. I think lore wise, there might be something interesting here, because he says in the caption of his Instagram comments that, or this Instagram post, he says, this book doesn't swallow your soul, but legend has it that misuse of the book will leave the reader forever silent. So like, maybe there's something in here about,
oh, is it a prequel?
Yeah, Silent Bob, like, could be like a flashback thing to like why Silent Bob is silent or something. I don't know. It could be interesting there. But also, like, speaking to the writing aspect of it, he mentioned in, I think it was December 2023, we quoted him from an episode of his Fat Man Beyond podcast talking about writing this new Jay and Silent Bob film. And he said, I'm writing it in the way that I wrote Red State. Anytime I know where the movie's going, that means the audience knows where the movie's going. And then he jumped, I'll jump forward here. Anytime I feel that way, I just turn the tables and write something completely different. Anytime I know what the punchline is, I'm forcing myself to find a different punchline to undercut it. So I'm using it as an exercise to sharpen the comedic knives. So I like that approach to telling really any story, but especially something coming from Kevin Smith, you know, where he has such a distinct style, a distinct comedy style. And if there is, in fact, this sort of unexpected flavor to the movie, which is very much what Red State felt like, it was like a big surprise that he made a movie like that at that time, then maybe this isn't just going to be a sort of run-of-the-mill Jay and Silent Bob kind of thing. Maybe it will have like more of a special feel to it. So
maybe, but I think I'll, like, that's an admirable way to approach things, but also you have the potential to like overthink and like talk yourself out of something that could have been still good. Like, it's this idea of going from like A to C, or even A to D instead of A to B. And it's sometimes you get people lost in the middle or trying to jump from one thing to another that they, you think that they won't expect, but then they're like, oh, well, but I don't really like that either. So
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, a couple more news stories here. Euphoria Season 3 is finally going to start filming 3 years after Season 2 premiered. I don't know, do you watch Euphoria, Brad? I haven't seen any of it.
I haven't watched any of it. My fiance watched it, and she enjoyed it, though. So, and I know the youths are very much into it.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it because I know it's a very popular show, and even though, just because I don't watch it doesn't mean that our listeners should be deprived of hearing about it. So I'm sure people have already heard at this point, but you can go to the story in the show notes and get more information there. BJ wrote the story and she watched the show, so she has much more of a like on the ground sort of personal investment in this news story. So you can read her talk about that there. The last thing I wanted to talk about is another thing that I have not seen, but I know that you have. The Devil Wears Prada is finally getting a sequel after all these years.
You haven't seen The Devil Wears Prada?
I've never seen it. Yeah, I don't know.
What are you doing? This movie is so good.
I've heard it's good. My wife likes it. And there have been several times where we've been like very close to watching it at home. And then just, I don't know, something, we've like narrowed it down to two things and we've always chosen the other thing. And it's just kind of always been on my back burner. And I know I really need to see this, but yeah, 2006 was like not my period where I was caring at all about rom-coms and things like that. So I blame my 2006 self for not seeing this immediately, and then I just never caught up with it. So I know that you, it sounds like especially, you really like the first movie, so tell me about that. And then what do you think about a sequel? Like, did the first film leave you with the feeling that there should be more to this story, or what do you think about the idea of a sequel happening at all, let alone all these years later?
I didn't see this movie in theaters, funnily enough, because I was kind of in the same position where I wasn't seeing, there were a lot more rom-coms at the time. Most of them weren't good, and it's not that I thought this one was necessarily going to be bad, it just wasn't my cup of tea at the time. But I caught it when it was like, I think, playing on one of the movie channels one time, and I liked it. And then like, it's become kind of like a go-to, like if it's on TV, like I'll put it on. Sometimes I'll toss it on in the background while I'm working. It just has a good flow to it. Anne Hathaway is fantastic in it. Meryl Streep is, of course, great. And Emily Blunt has a fantastic supporting turn as well. Stanley Tucci. So it's, I think it's become a favorite of mine, over the years. And no, it definitely does not leave you with the hope or even inclination that there's a sequel here. It's a very complete story. And if they're planning on bringing back both Anne Hathaway and Meryl Streep, I don't know what that story looks like. I feel like the best way to do it is having a new character who is maybe similar to Meryl Streep's character, or bring in a new girl instead of Anne Hathaway who goes through a similar process. But even then, and again, coming from somebody who just said, I like the idea of sequels doing the same thing that they did the first time around, this isn't one of those movies that I want to see that happen with. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what story they've cracked for this, to see if they can make it work. And, Meryl Streep is that good as the character to have her being in that role again to be interesting, but I just don't know if it's worth the desperation.
So I'm going to read you some story details from Puck, which broke the news about this. They say that the sequel will deal with the current woes of the publishing industry. Miranda is still leading Runway, but the magazine is a shell of its former self. In a karmic reversal of fortune, she is reliant on sponsorship from her former tortured assistant, Emily, played by Emily Blunt, who now leads a luxury marketing brand. My understanding is that as of right now, they have not locked down Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, and Emily Blunt to actually reprise their roles yet, but I think that's the plan. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't know. Do those story details do anything for you or change your opinion in any way?
Setting it in the modern media landscape does create some interest, and flipping the script in that way, because Emily Blunt's character very much did have her own Miranda vibe that Meryl Streep did. So that could be fun. But yeah, I just don't know. I just don't think it's necessary. Just let it be, guys. Let it be.
I don't know, Brad. I feel like the let it be days of Hollywood are behind us. It feels like every movie that was even remotely successful, regardless of how long ago it came out, is probably going to be sequelized at some point. Because
just go make a Devil Wears Prada musical. That could be fun, right? Did they do that? They had to have done that.
I think they did that. Yeah, I was just skimming through our story here, and it looks like
they did it back in
stage musical starring Vanessa Williams as Miranda. Yeah.
Okay. I guess, well, there you go.
I guess it's opening up this October. It's opening wide. They're in preview performances right now for that. So,
okay.
Anyway. All right. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Stock up on everyday essentials at Menards and save big money. We're your one-stop shop for pet food and supplies. Blue Buffalo dog and cat food is made with real meat and natural ingredients that your pets will love. Save big on Blue Buffalo pet food at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals. Save big.